the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast. Best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me on our normal reaction show, as is normally the case, is my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation. And the Cardinals are making things difficult for themselves as they go into Minnesota, they play a good game on both sides of the ball, and lose a tough one, 23-22. They're back down to 500, 6-6. A game back of the Seahawks in the division. And, you know, we're now back to, all that confidence that we had is now back to firmly doubting. And there's so much to talk about, right? There's so many factors to this. They lose the game 23-22. Initial reaction, Seth, before we break the things down that we want to talk about.
You know, I think the initial reaction was just frustration because this was a game that they had in hand. They were the better team. And I don't think that was really I don't think anybody would really argue with you. They were the better team for, you know, three quarters. And then that fourth quarter, it just got odd. And there's a lot that we're going to break down about it and things that happen, but it just seems like they're struggling to find a way to put away good teams when they have an opportunity.
For me, it was just it felt like a game of like they were in control, but you always knew.
Yeah, you had a sneaking suspicion the whole time.
It just felt that way. It just felt that way. And even when they had the chance at the end, you know, Kyler's going to go win it. But I'm like, it was going backwards. Like the momentum was not, you know, we don't believe in momentum. But they weren't. It was like they didn't have the winning mindset. They were playing good football, but weren't playing winning football. Right.
Yeah, they were playing at a weird, you know, kind of half aggressive, half soft, and it was the whole game. I mean, there was a lot of opportunities that they had to kind of put the Vikings away, and they just never did it. And then it all, you know, came to a head late in the game when, like you said, they have a chance to basically put the game away, decide to kick a field goal, then they, you know, for the first time all game, really play a really, really conservative style of defense and give up a touchdown. And then they come back and just look completely out of sorts. And it was interesting to see how that game unfolded, because like you said, it just seemed like it was coming to an end where it wasn't going to be.
They're running out of gas. Yeah. Like the defense was running out of gas. And we'll talk about that. So let's start. Among the things, we want to talk about Kyler Murray. We want to talk about coaching decisions. We want to talk about the other good and the bad. And then the implications of this loss. But let's start with Kyler Murray. Because what you have statistically is both a good and bad game, right? He's got 260 yards. It's among the highest total that he's had this season. If you look at his play overall, like, he handled the position, the situations, fine. One touchdown pass, two interceptions, and I don't know if you're going to agree or disagree. It really came down to Kyler made, like, if you look at it, there were two bad things that happened. There were basically, there were two bad Kyler moments, and it's not the interception on the last play on offense, because what do you do when it's fourth down and you're desperate and you have no receiver open? What do? You throw the ball to your best guy, hoping he makes a play. and it got picked off. That was a desperation move because there was nothing better that could have happened. But I will say this, the two things was the first interception and the intentional grounding that, you know, ultimately was disastrous because it led to the field goal, which led to the touchdown, which led to the loss. The first interception was interesting because my initial reaction is I thought he was throwing the ball away or trying to throw the ball away. Because Michael Wilson was open, but at the moment that he was open, Kyler didn't have a look. He was pressured, and so he threw off his back foot, and it looked like it was the way he threw it felt like a throwaway, but it was enough in the direction of Michael Wilson that maybe he thought Wilson was still winning the route. And instead, Byron Murphy, guy we all remember, picks off the pass, and that sort of changes one sort of momentum because, you know, this was coming after Minnesota had scored. And so they needed to add points. And that was, you know, the touch. We felt like they protect the football, they can beat this team. And they didn't protect the football. That was the first critical mistake, even though he was trying, like, if you're going to throw the ball away, throw the ball away. You know, and maybe I think in that situation, it's a precarious situation because there's a receiver in the area, but he wasn't out of the tackle box, I don't believe. And so you have to throw it away, but not throw it away too much. Otherwise, you're going to get called for grounding.
Yeah, and I mean, that was just a situation where it's frustrating to see because it was such a, like you said, the time it happened, it was an egregious play. Like they couldn't afford for that to happen. And, you know, the irony of the situation being that it was, you know, it wasn't a killer at that point, right? Like it ended up being a killer, but it wasn't a killer at that juncture of the game. And so, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, well, that was less than optimal, but like there's still, there's still time left. And so, you know, they come out, they hold the Vikings to a field goal there, and you're up 19-16, and you're like, okay, you get the ball back with 11:08 left, and you're like, okay, this feels good. And then they have they have a beautiful drive, an almost eight-minute drive into the red zone. And then there was a play, obviously, that, you know, in hindsight, the refs missed the call. I mean, they called a false start on Tip Raymond. It was not a false start on Tip Raymond. It was a potentially game-changing call. Like it was just a very bad call, and it's unfortunate at the time and place it happened, but, you know, it is what it is.
Right, so you've got first and goal at the 5. If they make the call of neutral zone infraction, if they make that correct call, it's first and goal between the 2 and the 3, inside the 3. Guess what? What do you do on that? Because you hand the ball off to James Conner. Easy call, and you're going to get close. Like, it was tough running, but you're at second goal inside the 2. Right. Inside the 1, if not a touchdown. But then it compounds that, so you're first and goal at the 10. And then that's when big mistake number 2 was, and that's the intentional grounding.
Yeah.
Really the only mistake that Kyler made was that he, like the interception, he didn't get enough on the throw to get it past the line of scrimmage.
Well, I also, in the replay, he wasn't outside of the tackle box either. So that was that would have been close to see what they would have called on that. But yeah, I mean, it's that. And, you know, you and I were talking about it off the air, and it's an interesting call in that situation, and not necessarily the pass itself. Although I would have run the ball on first down, you know, continue to run the clock if you can. But it was an interesting call in the sense that you ran a scheme where you didn't put anybody into a route on the right side of the formation for a right-handed quarterback, and you knew that they were going to bring pressure. I mean, that's what Brian Flores does, right? Like, that's what he's basically known for, is he's a guy that brings pressure consistently. And so the error was 1000% on Kyler, nobody else. But the fact that you didn't have an option in that area, I just feel like that's a play where, like, you've got to have a guy there. Like, you've got to have an option there for your quarterback to be able to make a play. And it was an interesting scenario. Like I said, that's 100% on Kyler, but it was interesting how it happened, because I don't think we would have expected to see that play come out in that situation. Like, you know, again, I would have run the ball first and 10, just get to second and 7, and then kind of go from there. But to run a pass play, you know, you ended up running, I think they were trying to set up a tight end delay to Trey McBride, because they had him block and then release, but the pressure was so quick that it just didn't work. And so, you know, you got to live with the results that you see. Like you said, for the most part, he played well enough to win, but he had two big errors in the game. And that's, you know, that's the interesting.
That's enough. It was enough. It was enough.
And so
that was enough to make the difference. And I think, and I feel like this for a long, I wish sometimes he weren't so insistent of running to pass, right? He is such a good runner that sometimes you just got to run.
Right. And it's almost like, and you and I have talked about this before, it's almost like, because of how much people have, like, talked about his running ability for so long, that he puts an insistence on running to throw the ball as opposed to just scrambling.
And boy's a playmaker. and you know, one or two, you know, three or four times when things are broken down, just get outside. Now, the way that pressure came, some of it was hard to get away from. Like, in particular, the intentional grounding, there was no way for getting. He had to bail so far back to be able to even get a throw off that didn't make it to the line of scrimmage, so it didn't even matter. So, but yeah, I don't have a problem. You know, I saw a couple of places that game is on the shoulders of Kyler. I'm like, I mean, I don't disagree, but I don't really agree either, because he wasn't the problem. They didn't lose because of Kyler. They lost because of they lost because of a number of other reasons. They lost because the defense, as good the numbers on the stat sheet look, they ultimately failed in the last third of the game. And then the coaching was too conservative. And let's talk about that. Coming up next to the Rise of Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the coaching decisions. There's been a lot said, especially on that last drive by the Cardinals that led to the field goal. That's coming up next to the Rise of Spirit. We're back on the Rise of Spirit podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Coaching decisions. I was surprised on two things. I'm not going to kill Jonathan Gannon for, I get both. I understand both decisions. One, when they scored their touchdown, I thought they would go for two to go for the 20-6, the 14-point lead. I thought that would happen. I understood. Like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with kicking the extra point there, because of you're chasing points. Like you don't need, you've got a 13 point lead. You should be able to hold a 13 point lead. You like, you're probably not going to wish you had 1 point. And they did wish they had 1 point, because having a 7 point lead at the end would have been much better.
And they've been really good in those instances, haven't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really interesting to see them not make that decision. As you said, that was a surprising one, unfortunate one. I don't know, you know, how you would state that, but that was interesting. There was one earlier, or there was a couple earlier in the game, before we get to the big one, that bothered me. They didn't call a timeout late in the first half on one of Minnesota's drives, that would have allowed them extra time to score a touchdown as opposed to kicking a field goal at the end of the first half. That was an interesting one to me. You look at it, you go through it, right? And at 2 minutes, the Cardinals, at the 2 minute warning, the Cardinals got a sack on Sam Darnold. There was 3rd and 6 that pushed them to, 4th and 14. So they're going to kick a field goal, and they kicked a 55-yard field goal. There was 1:16 when they kicked the field goal.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the thing. I was like, why didn't they call a timeout there? That didn't make any sense to me. I know Jonathan Gannon loves to save them. That's where, at the 2 minute warning. Yeah. Then you give yourself nearly a full 2 minutes, and then you don't, you can make a mistake.
Right.
With the in the field, but it gives you an extra play as opposed to just letting Minnesota let the clock run.
And so that was, to me, that was the first one. And then the second one, as you stated, was there was a play in the third quarter, and the Cardinals were up 9-6. And on 3rd and 6, they ran the ball with Amari DiMercato. And I was kind of like, I know they like DiMercato. I know they got away with one against the Bears. But that's a really interesting play call to kind of play it conservative and play for a field goal. Because, think about this. You kick the field goal, right? Then you come out of the half. They miss a field goal. And so you go down. You really have a chance to kind of put this game away. You have a chance to get up. You can get up by 10 and really kind of, distance yourself in this game. And you kick a field goal and you just go up by 6. It just didn't make sense, especially when you look at how those things went on that drive. They had a good drive. It just felt like it was playing a little too conservative.
Right. Like, especially because when you go third down and you have your passing unit in and you've got DiMercato and you hand it off, maybe he pops one. That's not 3rd and 6 at the 23 where in your field goal range already. You're basically setting up for a field goal. And if you're trying, this is different than a draw play which the Cardinals do real well. Like, DiMercato,
extremely well.
He runs really well on those draw plays, but those are especially useful when you're trying to go from a long field goal to a normal field goal. Not when you're going from 41 to maybe make it 37, 36. It didn't make sense. Like, try and make a play to pick up the first down. And then if you don't get anything out of it, then you still get a 41-yard field goal. As it was, DiMercato only picked up 1 yard on the play. They get the field goal. Yeah, that did feel like a weird play choice in that particular scenario as well, because you weren't pressed with the half or the end of the game, right? You'll do that sometimes to at the end of the half or a game because you're pressed for time. And they were pressed for time. It was
right, not at 9:20 in the third quarter.
No.
That was an interesting play. And then obviously the end. And so like those plays really kind of stuck with me, or those decisions really stuck with me, because we haven't seen that conservative side of Jonathan Gannon as a head coach. And so then to see it come out in a game against a team that was 9-2 coming into this game. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the NFL record wise. And we've talked about it. They've been, most of their games have been similar to what the Cardinals have done, right? Like that most of their games have been close contested games where they just find a way to win. And it comes back to this team. It just felt like they struggled to make a play when it was time. And it's interesting to kind of look at it, because everybody would say the defense outplayed the offense in this game, right? But when you go by, and I know it's not like the best, you know, the best metric and whatnot, but it was the Cardinals defense and special teams that really hurt them in this game, especially at the end. And so, you know, it's just one of those situations where you look at kind of how this game went, and they had opportunities and they didn't take advantage of them. And some of that's, you know, falls directly on Jonathan Gannon and his decision making, because when you play scared and conservative, your team, you know, does the same, right?
Yeah. You know, in some ways I get some of the game plan. I think what it was is you go into a game and that Minnesota defense is great. And so rather than, so like you go against some teams where you've got a high powered offense, and Gannon knows, okay, kick and field goals ain't going to do it. But this is a team, Minnesota team, I think he felt was a stronger defensive team than offensive team. And so you're like, this defense is great. If we're moving the ball, we take the points where we can get them. Which is, wasn't it kind of like, oh, this is that defensive head coach mentality who's trusting his defense. And that leads us to the last one, that basically I understand what Gannon did, where he said, okay, we'll kick the field goal, we'll be up six, they have to score a touchdown. But that's kind of been, that isn't that been anti-Gannon most of the last year and a half?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I don't know if it was Kyle Odegaard. I don't know who tweeted it or posted it, whatever they call these things now. But they said it's really interesting to see when decisions actually matter. When you're a winning team and decisions matter for playoff seeding, as opposed to a plucky upstart losing team, how different the decisions come out. Because that's exactly what we've seen with Gannon, is that the guy that was uber aggressive last year, that was analytics driven, but then sometimes, you know, by the gut, all of a sudden it's very safe. And that's surprising. And I'm not going to lie, a little disappointing. And so I hope it isn't who he is, because I get living by the sword, die by the sword. But at the same time, you've got to be aggressive in those situations when you have that chance.
Yeah. And you know, Greg Olson mentioned it. We've seen it from a few analysts. Mina Kimes explained it, is going from being up three to up six is really interesting, because when you're put in a high leverage situation, like in a fourth down, as it's been explained, an offense knowing they need a touchdown knows it's four downs. If they're down only three, they might just take the points and go for the field goal to tie it and then trust their defense for overtime. And in that case, then the Cardinals have time to go down and kick a field goal. And but you're not trailing. And the on the other side of that is if they fail to score that touchdown, okay, depending on what that is. So as it was, when they kicked the field goal at 3:20, so Minnesota gets the ball at their 30 because of after the kickoff with 3:20 to go. So you've got 3:20 to go 70 yards. If they had gone for it and just failed or gotten short, like if they don't score the touchdown, then you're still looking at them getting the ball with 3:20 left, only it's from inside the five. And so you've given them a 95, 96, 97, 98-yard field to go down to score the touchdown. They still have to score a touchdown to win. And if they fall short and kick the field goal, the worst thing. So if they run out the clock to kick a field goal, it's the worst thing that happens overtime. And I thought, while I understand the mentality, especially with how the defense had played for most of the game, but at the same time, what do we know about this defense? They're not this. This is not a defense that sustains an entire game of stop after stop after stop, and especially when you have to play four downs. And so they score the touchdown, game over. And if they don't score the touchdown, they've got to go 96 yards.
Well, and just think about this. In this game, and don't get me wrong, the defense played very well. But in this game, you had a 44-yard drive for a field goal. Then you had a fumble on the first play of the drive. By the way, the run was for 5 yards before Sean Murphy bunting punched it out, right? Then you had probably your best defensive drive of the game, a minus 3 yard punt you forced. Then you gave up a 33 yard drive for a field goal. Then you gave up coming out of the half. This is out of the half, a 45-yard drive. And they missed a field goal. You had your best drive of the game where you only gave up -5 yards and forced a punt on 3 plays. But then you gave up 70 a touchdown, 55 a field goal, and 70 a touchdown. I know that last one is kind of where we're at anyways. So you had, and again, I don't want to take anything away from the fumble, but you had two good drives on defense. And that was the catalyst for the decision to go, okay, you know, we can kick a field goal and get a stop. And it's like, well, you haven't since 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. Like, you haven't stopped them at all. Like, sometimes, you know, you're talking about momentum and like, and all of that. And like, sometimes you have to look at it and go, okay, the momentum's telling me like, we're not going to get a stop here.
And like, even if you didn't completely trust the defense, you're putting them in a better leveraged situation if it's inside the five.
Well, and that's, I mean, Greg Olsen even said it on that drive. He goes, they probably kick the field goal when it's 4th and 5, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
50 yard field goal instead of throwing a pass. Now, obviously, hindsight, if they would have known it was going to be the easiest pass they've ever thrown in the history of mankind to Justin Jefferson, that's also an incredibly interesting decision to not cover Justin Jefferson on a 4th and 5 situation, but that's another conversation. But yeah, it's just like, what are you guys doing here? And yeah, so it was a frustrating end of the game, and it just seemed like this team was, you know, with the inability to score touchdowns, and then
you just kept waiting for the defensive play. You're like, something's happening. There's going to be a pick. Sam Darnold's going to throw a pick, and he never threw a pick.
Right. And so it just seemed like you were waiting, and that never came, and then this is what happened.
Coming up next on the Rise of the Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the other good and bad things that we saw from this game. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. You look at the stat sheet, the good and the bad. Cardinals played a good offensive game, and they played a very good defensive game because they outgained Minnesota 406-273. So they held Minnesota under 300 yards. They held them to 1-for-8 on third down. Everything about that says they outdid them in time of possession, nearly 36 minutes to just over 24. Everything about that says, yes, that's a winning formula. The difference being the Cardinals turned the ball over twice, and that they were going by the end, it was even until that desperation fourth down throw. And so, like, you know, you look at that, this was another good performance by the defense. They played great on third down. Cardinals were the second worst third down defense in the NFL. Second worst. They were the worst until recently. And I think the Panthers, they may have moved ahead of the Panthers, but the Cardinals have been absolutely atrocious on third down, and they were great on third down. They limited the run game. They pressured. They got 5 sacks, so they sacked. They got another 5 sack week, so the pass rush is getting home. You mainly contained Justin Jefferson until the end. And then offensively, they moved the ball really well. They managed to run for over 150 yards against the league's number one rush defense. And they were okay on third down. They weren't good, but they're okay, 5 of 13. But then the bad is when they got to the red zone, just the mistakes. I mean, the penalties, they had 10 penalties. And now we already talked about the false start by Tip Riemann that probably shouldn't have been. But it felt like they just couldn't get out of their own way. And Jonathan Gannon, like, penalties, they hate the penalties. But Jonathan Gannon noted that this officiating crew was a low flag team, and they were flagged 10 times. They essentially gave up the length of the field in penalties.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the most frustrating part for Gannon in this whole situation, is that they were flagged 10 times for 96 yards. And so you look at it, right, and I know a sack is a loss of down, so, like, it's not a complete apples-to-apples situation, but the Cardinals had more penalty yards than the Vikings had penalty yards and sacked yards lost combined. And that's a huge deal when you're talking about 86 yards combined. The Vikings have 56 yards in penalties and 30 in sack yards lost. The Cardinals had 96 yards in penalties. It's just not something that can happen if you want to be a good team.
Tip Riemann had a rough game. It was a rough, and he's been so good this year. He's had a couple of penalties early, but, like, his role has been really good. And that was a rough game for Tip.
I've never seen a guy have so many false starts. It was kind of crazy. He was, I don't know if it was the noise. I don't know what it was. So it was kind of crazy.
I'm sure that'll get fixed because it had been, that was anomalous in that game. But then you look at the things, and then the red zone. The red zone is where the Cardinals had the problem. If they convert one more red zone for a touch, they win the game. They were 1-for-6 in the red zone. They went 0-for-2. So they are now 0-for-3 in their last 3 goal-to-go situations. If they were a perfect, 13-for-13 or 14, I don't remember how many it was, before they failed against the Seahawks. And that was the key. It ultimately came down to the stat that mattered the most was red zone offense. They went 1-for-6 in the red zone in terms of touchdowns.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was one of the biggest situations, right? And we knew that was kind of the crux of the loss overall, is that when you can't convert touchdowns, especially when you're in the red zone consistently, you're usually not going to win a game. And in that, you know, as Cardinals fans, we knew, we kind of felt that coming the whole game. And that's what the problem becomes. You know, you saw good things from different guys, right? Like, I thought for the most part, the offensive line wasn't bad.
No, they definitely bounced back. Definitely bounced back from that performance against Seattle.
I don't think the running game was great by any means, because Kyler had, you know, 48 yards. It was 17 carries to get to 68 for James. But like you said, the defense,
it was the number one rush defense in the NFL, and so I thought it was good enough.
Good enough. I think that's the best way to put it.
It was nice to see LJ Collier was, you know, he's finally looking consistently good. He had two more sacks. He has 3.5 sacks in his last four games. This is really good to see. Mac Wilson had a couple sacks, but the fact that they're starting to get sack production, it's really good. Just remember, the last season they had, over the last six games of the season, one pretend sack, and that was the Justin Fields running out of bounds for no gain when Dennis Gardick was in the area. But they are getting to the quarterback. They sacked Geno five times. They sacked Sam Darnold five times. And that's not changing a whole lot, but this defense is playing. That's 2 weeks in a row where they didn't allow even 300 yards. And that's, honestly, that's something for this team.
Yeah, and that's what they have to build off of. They have to continue to build off the positives, because as much as it's easy to focus on the negatives, and there were negatives. I mean, think about the touchdown they gave up to Johnny Mundt, right? Like,
oh, geez.
It was a brilliant defensive play by Mac Wilson, who had been phenomenal for the whole game. And he just tripped over his own feet. I mean, literally, he just tripped over his own feet. And so it's like, it's one of those situations where you look at it and you go, ah, damn, like they had it and they just fumbled it. And those are the things.
Bunting had probably his best game of the year.
Right. And that's the thing. And so, yeah, it's just one of those situations. You watch this game and you see what happened, and you have to pull the good out of it, because it's just easier to know what the bad is, because it's obvious. I mean, it's the loss, it's the interceptions, it's the
penalties.
It's the penalties, and then of course, obviously, the fact that it was, you know, the inability to finish, and then of course the Jonathan Gannon situation. So, yeah, I mean, you watch it, you look at it, and it's sad, but at the same time, there are positives coming out of this.
Coming up next on the Rises Here podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the implications that come from this loss. That's coming up next on Rises Here Red. We're back on the Rises Here podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Cardinals now 6-6, Seattle 7-5 after they came back from 14 points down to beat the New York Jets. And we'll talk about it. Like, holy crap, Leonard Williams is blowing things up. And quietly, the Seahawks have won three games in a row. Their defense hasn't allowed 300 yards of offense in three straight games. Leonard Williams has 4.5 sacks in those last 2 weeks and a pick six. That's what I'm worried about. But aside from the Seattle game, because we'll talk later this week, and I think I probably, after having talked to Cole Musgrove a couple weeks ago, we'll probably just do two shows with just the two shows with me and Seth. That game, that loss, puts the Cardinals in a precarious situation now, that if they'd have beaten Minnesota, you would have felt good. But now they're really in playoff mode. Like, they have to beat Seattle. that this game this week makes or breaks their season, essentially.
Yeah, it does. And if they lose, you know, they're basically done for the year.
Yeah, they're basically three games behind, because there'll be two games behind Seattle, but have the head-to-head. They'll lose the head-to-head. So they're basically three with four games to go. They'll need to win out, and Seattle could win only one more game for the Cardinals to win the division. So it would be they would have gone from being a position of confidence and control to needing a whole lot of help, which they could still get. But
100%. But that's the thing, is you don't want to have to count on anybody else.
Yeah, it's going to be something else. But yeah, so now the Cardinals are in a situation where they are definitely in playoff mode. It's now almost win or get eliminated. Not completely, but now they're in that sort of mode. And so, but the Cardinals now hit the next stretch of their schedule, where they're going to face the Seahawks at home. They're going to play the Patriots. They're going to play the Panthers. They're going to play the Rams. And they're going to play the 49ers. And the 49ers are done. We'll see how many wins they get. But Christian McCaffrey, Jordan Mason, both on IR. Brock Purdy looking very mortal. That doesn't mean the 49ers are going to just lay down in Week 18. But the Cardinals, like, they look like it. They're in position that they can rattle off some wins, but that's got to start this weekend.
Yeah, it definitely has to start, and they've got to get back on track, or this is going to get out of hand quick.
Where is the confidence level? Because, like, after the Seattle game, well, before the Seattle game, had they won that, like we said, 100% confidence in winning the division. Last week, after the loss to Seattle, I said 60% confident, but I was worried that Seattle's defense was coming around. Now this week, and Seattle's got the full game lead. The Cardinals lost again, and they're behind. I'm now at best a toss up for me right now. Like, I the confidence is gone. I know it's a possibility, but it's at best 50-50 for me.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing.
And yeah, but I mean, isn't this, but I guess big picture, they're playing meaningful games in December. We're hitting week 14 and we're playing meaningful games. And that was basically the goal this year. We did elevate our expectations mid-season. We did say, okay, next step. Now they need to win the division. And so they're disappointing us. But if you're looking big picture, this is still where we wanted the Cardinals to be. And that is playing in games that matter late in the season.
Pride. Right. And they're there and they have a chance. It's just, you know, a loss this week makes it really, really difficult on themselves. Whereas a win, you're virtually in first place. I know there's some tiebreaker things that they'd have to.
They will be technically in first place because they'll have three division wins, but we also like the schedule that's left, because the Cardinals do have the best schedule left when it comes to the teams left in the NFC West. And so you put them back on top, then you're in a good position. Now they can't go F around and lose to the Panthers and Patriots. They have to win three games in a row now. They do.
Exactly.
They have to win three games in a row. And if they do, guess what? They're 9-8. I mean, they're 9-6.
Six,
yeah. 9-6 going into the final 2 weeks of the season, which is a game better than we both thought they would be, I think.
Right. And that's the frustrating thing is they're definitely ahead of where we expected them to be. It was just, once they got there and they had the chances, you hate to see a team miss their opportunities, because
correct,
as we've seen, and this isn't to compare at all, but like, there's only so many bullets in the gun, so to speak, and you know, you look at a team like the 49ers, they seem to have, you know, fired all their bullets with this gun. And so now you're saying to yourself, okay, like you might have a nice little 2-3 year window, including this year. So now you're saying, oh, well, now this year may not work out. So now you're back to having a, you know, maybe a 2-year window after this. And that's in a good, you know, a good run, because in reality, it's really hard to be a team without a, without a quarterback or coaching combo that is elite. It is really hard to be a team that competes every year. And I don't mean to like try to disparage Kyler or Jonathan Gannon, but you need to only look no further than both the Bengals and the Rams, right? Like, I don't think many people would say that Kyler's better than Joe Burrow, and they have a much better record than the Bengals. I don't know if anybody until this year would have thought that Jonathan Gannon was a better coach than Zach Taylor, right? Like, and so it's truly a year-to-year thing, unless you've got a situation like Pittsburgh or Baltimore where you have Tomlin or Harbaugh, right? And then obviously there's the other exceptions like the Bills and the Chiefs. So those are the teams that typically, you know, that have something special, where most teams it's like, hey, you've got a 2-4 year window to do things, you better get it done. And so that'll be what's interesting to kind of follow and see.
You know what we forgot to talk about? James Conner's contract extension, which,
yeah, I think we both love it, right?
Yeah, especially for the money. Well, I haven't seen the complete details, but for $19 million, and say $5 million of that comes this year, that means you only have $14 million over the next 2 years. And that's fantastic. That's fantastic. You get out after his age 31 year, and you should be in a good spot. And although I did think, we didn't talk so much about this, but earlier, because we were waiting for the off season. But when I saw a TikTok that Kyler Murray posted that was about his brother James Conner, I was like, they have to re-sign JC. They had to. Yeah. There was no way around it. So they re-signed James. The money is good. And he's proven to be durable. Like, he's getting better. Last year, he said he wanted that to be the baseline for the rest of his career. He's on pace for doing that. Honestly, you know, with two more seasons beyond this season, he should, if he's healthy, establish himself as, in terms of production, he'll be number two on the all-time rushing list. And for the Cardinals, franchise history, behind only OJ. A Otis Anderson, who far and away, he's got one yard shy of 8,000 yards, but he's going to pass Stump Mitchell if he stays healthy these next two seasons.
Yeah, and he's a special player, and he's the type of guy that you want in-house and to continue to build your team around.
So good job with Cardinals on that, taking care of that. We'll see with Buda Baker. We'll see with Kaiser White. Will Hernandez, that'll be an interesting choice as well because of the injury. But yeah, that's fantastic. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sierra podcast, best hour of Cardinals Talk of the Web. I don't know if I'll have a preview show with Seahawks Wire this week, since we just had a couple weeks ago. What else are we going to talk about? And in that case, Seth and I will be back later this week to preview Cardinals Seahawks. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Roll!